Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Sound Bombing community. Before we begin, I want to just take a deep breath and inhale. And I'm going to exhale and let it go. That is the breath of life that says that you are alive. And I'm so grateful that you're joining me here in the bomb shelter for another exciting edition of Sound Bombing. You all can hear by the sound of my voice. I am just always so excited that you all find that your time and taking time to spend with me in the bomb shelter. Here are our engineers and our producers. We're so grateful that you log on. We're grateful that you are sending us emails, and we're grateful that you're sending us questions. And as always, again, if there's some guests that you want us to have on the show, please, please, please send us an email and let me know. Again, my website is drlds.com. That's drlds.com. Dr. Larry David Sam or Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields. However you look at it, drlds.com. Send me an email. Check out the things that I'm doing. Unfortunately, I've not been on the road. You all know I travel a lot speaking and doing what I'm passionate and I love. But, you know, I've been grounded like most people. So we're turning and tuning into virtual learning and distance learning. And so I'm so grateful for technology. If you listened to the show last week, you were in for a treat. We had on Brendan Murphy all the way from Australia. And Brendan, you know, talked to us about our DNA. And not DNA because he's looking to solve a crime, or not because he's trying to find out, are you the baby daddy or the baby's mama? No, he talked about spiritual DNA and understanding our spirits and our bodies. And I learned so much about DNA activation. So I want to thank Brendan, from my man from the land down under, who came in the bomb shelter. It was really early for me and late for him, but we worked it out. And so again, I always talk about you all and your safety. Please practice physical distancing, not social distancing. That's a whole nother thing, because we want to stay social. We are social creatures by nature, but we want to practice physical distancing, and that is a difference. And so again, I am not practicing social distancing because I am in the studio and I have somebody with me. And before I bring up the person who is joining me today, I want you to sit back, relax, take a deep breath. Inhale, and let's get this party started. Sound bombers, most people in modern world have resigned themselves to a cliche existence, indulging in endless distractions. They go through life with a minimal pseudo-faith and avoid grasping the emptiness of their lives. They are endlessly haunted by the shallowness of their relationships, neurotic issues, and inaccessible loneliness. And yet there's so much more to us as a species than what we really know. You and I carry the most mysterious and magnificent qualities within us imaginable, yet we unknowingly guard and protect the gift that is our souls from the world. It's so easy for us to feel meaningless when we perceive ourselves as mere cogs in society's machines. The truth is that we are much more than slaves of 9-to-5 jobs. We are capable of creating deeply meaningful, mystical, and fulfilling lives, we are capable of finding our true calling. Well, my next guest just did that, or my next guest did just that, however you want to say it. Uma Shankari. Uma was born and brought up in India. She moved to the U.S. in 1997 to pursue her master's degree in computer science. She then moved to what I feel is the greatest city on the planet, my home, Chicago, to pursue her career in the financial industry as a computer engineer. While having a thriving career at a top firm in management, she had a spiritual awakening in 2012. And in 2014, she quit her job to reassess her life. While she thought she would return to the corporate world, it never happened. Since then, she started a small plant-based food business. She's written several books, taught people to heal their body through a plant-based diet, has recently become an artist who creates galactic sound and light art. But her seminal work is The Lion's Wisdom, a channeled text toward awakening human consciousness, embracing our oneness with the human heart. In this channeled text, a wise lion distraught by the condition of the world and its people tutors a human spirit about the part we all play in creating and preserving balance and harmony. I want to welcome Uma to the show. Welcome, Uma. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Lamar. Thank you for having me here. And I'm really excited. And thank you for a thorough explanation of all that I do right now. So thank you again.
Uma, you are doing some amazing things. So I wanted to give you that opportunity. I wanted to really elevate the work that you're doing. Because again, I read a lot of the things that you were doing. I actually tapped into the book this morning. So I have some questions about that. But before we get into the work, one of my former roommates when I moved here in Baltimore is from India. Her name is Shereka Pillay. And I used to love the story that Rekha would tell about coming from India. And I went to Grambling, and we have a partnership with India called Gandhi Gram. And so I almost had an opportunity to go to India. But I think at the time in the late 80s, early 90s, I think that there was a war or something going on that didn't allow students from this country to go there. So before we get into your work, tell me about your transition from India to the United States. What was that like?
Well, you know, I would say it was very funny. I tend to share the story with a lot of people, and they end up laughing so hard that it's, you know, and I haven't shared it in a long time, so it's good memories coming back. So when I came to U.S., I had never boarded a plane. I lived in a big city, and I was, you know, I was a regular middle-class Indian family growing up in the 80s and 90s. So really not a lot of, you know, exposure to what we think is very normal in the Western world. So when I was young, when relatives would come from small towns to visit us, we would go to the airport, stand outside the airport. There will be the fencing and just sit and stare at the airplanes. That was something that I did when I was growing up. So I never thought I would board a plane in my life. And here I was for the first time coming to Chicago from 100 degree weather. And all the people that I knew, and reached out in the US, who had moved to the US from India, said, you need to buy everything you need. So I had about 3 jackets on me and sitting in an airplane, not knowing how to, you know, get on an escalator with a heavy bag, and finally was transitioning through Chicago to go to St. Louis, where I didn't know how to get a cart to load my luggage, which weighed more than me. And I was dragging it on the floor, and this lady stopped me and helped me put it on a cart because I just didn't know. And Chicago was as big as the city I lived in, and I didn't know where to go. And I was up the escalators, really lost. And I went to a lady who is from the South Side, and I went and asked her, hey, how do I go here? And she told me, and I couldn't understand American English. And to put it on top of it, you have the South Side, you know, sort of like the slang on top of it. And it was one interesting experience, you know. And I had everything from curry powder to napkins to oil to you name it, plus the three jackets I was wearing, and I was hot as hell. And somehow I landed in the St. Louis airport. I didn't even know that I had to catch another flight from Chicago to St. Louis because I didn't know the difference between Chicago and St. Louis. And today I have traveled about close to 30 countries.
I love those stories, Uma. I do a storytelling series called Shortcuts. And it's a series where basically we create an opportunity for people, in particular people of color like yourself, who share a story about whatever the theme is. And I mean, we've done stories for teachers, for women, we've done stories for the LGBTQ community, but we did one called Coming to America, Uma, and it was about immigrants who migrated to this country. And I'm listening to you and I'm laughing because I remember one of the storytellers who was from Belize, who was so excited to come to America. And just like you, she had all the spice. And it's funny, I love Indian food. That's a whole other conversation. So I'm smelling, as you're talking, I'm smelling the curry. I'm looking at everything that you have. And so I think about Raquel, who's from Belize, and she gets off this plane and she gets to the escalator and she stands there. And the crowds, people didn't get this because the people she was talking to were from this country. So she stands at the escalator and she wonders, what the hell am I supposed to do? Why are these stairs moving? They should not they should not be moving. And so to hear you say that you got there and then you said the South Side with the slang, because I'm from the South Side of Chicago. So I'm just looking at you. I'm thinking of Coming to America, which just came on recently. I'm thinking of all of these individuals who are from other countries. But that's a great story. And I'm sure that story really, really started you on your own personal journey as it relates to your spiritual growth, coming to another country, what that was like being a person who is a person of color, but look different from the people of color on the South Side of Chicago and things of that nature. So I really, really appreciate that. So in the introduction, I talked about you having this great career in the field that you were in. And then all of a sudden in 2012, you had an awakening that led you to leave corporate America. Now, what I do understand, let me just back up. I understand Indian culture. I understand African culture. And what I mean is you're turning to your parents and saying, I'm leaving this field, you know where I'm going with this, to then travel to do it's like my Nigerian friends. Like, I have a Nigerian friend, she says, well, my brother is a doctor, my sister is a lawyer, and I'm a comedian, and I'm the black sheep of the family. Talk to me, in 2012, what actually happened during that time when you had the shift?
Yes, even before 2012, I'll tell you one thing. People come to me and they say, oh my God, Indians are so smart. And they think it is a really, it's a compliment. To me, it's not. It's not to belittle someone that is saying that. I really don't think any particular community or culture can be singularly smarter or outsmart anybody. That's a very bleak world we live in. And growing up in the Indian culture, I can only tell you the pressure kids get from their parents to be the best. To be an engineer, to be a doctor, to be this or that. And it really stilts the growth of the child in its creativity. And it's a really sorry state of the world we live in. And when I hear that, it really, I hate to say it, but this is how it irritates me. People think I should be so jumping out of joy that they're saying that the Indian culture is such a smart culture. There are a lot of smart people in Indian culture, don't get me wrong, but that doesn't come from education alone. Education is just something that you get slapped on because you are expected to do it. So to go into what you're asking, you know, my mom, who passed away last year, has always been very, very courageous, very, a very enterprising woman. So when I left for Chicago or the US, she was like, yep, you can go. But my dad, on the other hand, was scared because it was, you know, he didn't know how to react to it. And my mom was like, you go, you're good. And when I left my job, it's so funny, my dad was the first one to say, well, why? He was so, my dad has a hard time breaking the mold. So when I had to leave India, I was breaking the mold. When I was leaving the job, I had to break the mold. And my mom, on the other hand, for some reason, she knew, like, no matter what, I know how to take care of myself. She intuitively, she knew it. So when I left my job, I sat with my dad and I explained it to him over and over. And finally, I realized he didn't want to, like, really understand it. He just wanted his daughter back in that high-paying job, you know, just really comfortable. And it comes from the place of fear of what her daughter's going to do without a paycheck. And it also comes with the sort of, like, you know, in India, there's this whole culture of, you know, to tell others, like, what your child is doing and just be proud of it. And I think that is coming from the lack within ourselves, that we have to pride ourselves through our children. You know, it's good to have pride for our children, regardless of what they do. But to be proud of our children just because he or she went to Harvard or he or she is a doctor. And so what if someone is a janitor, that the mother or the father is not supposed to be proud of them? It's sort of like that kind of culture. It's really hard for me to digest. But so my dad has a really hard time. So I have a very strong connection with my dad, and I was very scared to tell my dad this. So once I got through it, I just looked at him and I thought, you know what? I really don't care. I don't care what you think. I love you, but I don't care what you think, because you are your own person and I'm my own person. And I have to cut this codependency that we have, that you need to derive something from me and I need to derive something from you. I didn't tell that to him explicitly, but that is where I came to a point and I stopped caring what he thought about me. And it also eventually led me that, you know, when you stop something, it doesn't just stop you from just with the relationship with your father. It just stops a whole bunch of things that you go into agreement with culturally. So I literally, like, I cut it off. And I started my rebelliousness even earlier, because I have remained single in an Indian community where, you know, being married is such a huge thing.
I know. I've gone to an Indian wedding, and believe me, you all know how to, as the kids say, turn up.
Party.
Party. Yes, you do. Yes. And you missing out. Uma, you missing out on all of that?
Exactly, you know.
What is wrong with you?
What is wrong with me? Yeah, so I have broken a lot of things. And, you know, breaking those rules were not just for the pure sake of rebelling. All those breaking of the rules came from my own intuitiveness on what I wanted. And it was just the awakening to myself, rather than a daughter of someone or a sister of someone or from an Indian culture. I really want to break this identity that we all have with a country or a race or a language, because ultimately we are a divine being.
So where do you get that spirit from, that rebellious soul? Because you're going against not only just your mother, I mean, not only against your father, but you're going against a culture who tells little brown girls like you that mm-hmm. you can't do those things, that you should be married, that you should have kids, you should get a career in a certain field. We know there's certain fields that folks from Indian culture go to. Where does mm-hmm. that rebellious soul come from? And then how is it the soul or is it the ego? And can you sort of explain the difference between the
yes,
two, though?
I will. You know, one of the things I think I got the best from both my parents. My mom was extremely rebellious. You know, she lived her life the way she wanted to. And I think a lot of families don't do this, but my parents had a separate bank account. My mom worked as a teacher. She literally knew the entire city in the back of her hand. So besides, and my dad was sort of like the opposite, you know, he never really wanted to rebel against anything. He was such a conformist. But I don't think it's either one. What really happened is it happened to me organically. Rather than saying, you know, it's the ego that did it or the soul that did it, I think my path had been paved for me. I was not a rebellious child when I was younger, although my mom would disagree if she were alive. In my perception, I was a conformist because my sisters went and did everything that they wanted to do. I never did. I followed exactly the rules that were played by. But one thing I was sure is that the minute I knew that I wanted to come to the U.S., like one of my friends was writing for GRE, and I asked her, what are you doing? And she said, I'm going to the U.S. And immediately decided I was coming here. It wasn't like trying to rebel or oh my God, this is the ego. I think my soul had a plan for me. And when I came to the U.S., it was a very lonely existence for me. It was not an easy existence. Immigrants go through a lot of depression, a lot of isolation, a lot of separation, because they don't know how to really merge within the community because there's not very many outlets. So for me, I would say it was probably a soul journey, because who I am today, I mean, at the core of, I still have a compassionate heart like I was young, but I think I'm more resilient and much more stronger than I ever have been in my entire life. And that is partly my soul growth and evolution. And also, when you're really strong in your spiritual evolution, it doesn't matter what anybody is thinking. It just, you just trust what is being brought to you. And there is, when something is brought to you, there's an elation within you, and there's no doubt in your mind that this has come to you for another reason than just for the purpose of, like, you know, just satisfying some agenda.
So I heard you mention two words, Uma, soul and spirit. Do you think soul and spirit are separate, or do you find them as one and the same?
I think everything is one. I think, but because we live in such a three-dimensional world, we need to understand the different aspects of ourselves so that when it comes together as one, we understand it. So it's a path. It's not like, you know, even though I have a body and I have a soul, you know, we may say that they are separate, but at the end of the day, you were just talking about your previous guest, your soul is dissolved in every single cell of your body, in the DNA of your body. It is everywhere. But if you don't tell someone the concept of soul and a body, people are not going to get it. So I think we need, for the sake of understanding, a spirit and a soul and a body are separate. But we are going into the space of awakening, but that we are coming as race, as culture, as language, as one. So if everything has to come together as one, then our soul, spirit, and body also has to be one.
So as you came along your journey, or what you might have called your awakening, you know, two things. Where did it lead you? And what's the most important thing you've learned about yourself during this journey?
You know, that's a very good question. I'm going to take you back even before 2012. I have been a spiritual person ever since I was younger. I didn't know it. I've been a clairvoyant since I was 8. And there are several evidences for it, and I won't go deep into it. But in 2007, I had something that came to me that was, I got messages, very clearly audible messages, but in the form of thoughts that were very clear about people's relationships. And it freaked me out. And I said, I don't want to know. I knew before people were going to separate or divorce, I knew that was going to happen. And people would call me and to tell me that. And I had already known a couple of weeks before that I was going to get a call. And it was just really hard for me. And I said, whoever this is giving it to me, I don't want it. Stop it now. And it stopped. Literally, it stopped like that. But what it is your spiritual, I don't know if I'm answering your question. So if not, please stop me. So basically what it was is, like, you know, you are always given an opportunity to spiritually evolve. It doesn't happen at one moment. That one moment that really happened is where you were pushed to a level that you had to literally stop and say, okay, this is something very different from what has happened to me all my life. So in 2007 that happened, it freaked me out. So for the next 5 years, I really was in contemplation about what had happened, who had given me that information, that I knew so clearly that three of my friends were going to either separate or divorce. Who was that? You know, I stayed in contemplation. And in 2012, I just got the message why and how this comes about. And then the spiritual evolution just exploded for me. It just really exploded in the form of energy healing. And, you know, energy healing was the first thing that I did in 2012 that led me to really believe in myself as a divine being and the first step towards my own divinity. But what elevated the conversation was I was sitting on, I did a lot of energy healing, and one day I was sitting and I was like, I need to understand love. I just spoke it out loud. And I went to the Amazon. There was a book that was staring in my face. It was called The Book of Love. It's a book by Paul Selig, The Book of Love and Creation. I literally, the reading of that book catapulted my divinity to a higher octave than I could ever have contemplated, ever have understood. See, the quantum nature of spirituality, when it hits you, it just shoves you, you know, not to hurt you, but to give you a jolt of like what is really waiting for you on the other side. I don't think any of us can miss spiritual evolution. Even if we are, we're probably not paying attention. That's the only thing. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. So it's talking about paying attention. What are some tools that are in your toolkit that you can share with our listeners that we all have that we use to sort of tap into that sort of spiritual connection? Because I too feel the same way. I created this show Sound Bombing to highlight, I think, some of the high achievers. When I say high achievers, I'm not talking about people who are financially stable. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about people who are making all this money, but I'm just saying they are in tune and connected to their gifts and they want to share them with others. What are some tools that you can share with our listeners to tap into that? And then the other part is, what you talked about this word fear. What do you do when you feel scared or overwhelmed by the spiritual guidance or the messages that are coming to you?
Got it. So first of all, I want to say there is no one cookie cutter way. The more we go into one cookie cutter way, that is where we're going to go back into the three dimension and kind of trying to figure out, oh, if that works for that person, that has to work for me. What is so amazing about spiritual journeys is it has been given to you. It is put on a golden platter and served to you. It is really about paying attention to what is being served to you. And to be honest with you, some of the things that are really amazing that we kind of miss is the worst things that happen in our life. The worst things that happen in our life sometimes become the best things for ourselves. Because, you know, I would like to say, well, get up and do meditation every morning, but it's really not gonna jive for everybody. You know, for me, my evolution was really listening to something that was knocking at my door. In 2012, when I had the spiritual evolution, my guides were literally kicking my butt and saying, you need to go and do spiritual, you have to go and do some body work. I was resisting. At that point, I didn't even know what body work was. I could have easily said, this is some kind of thought, and I could have let it go. But it was so strong for me. I thought, okay, I'm going to go and do some body work, and I'm going to realize it's the most, you know, stupidest thing I have done in my life, and I'll be done with it, and I can move on with my three-dimensional way of life. Guess what? That body work awakened my senses. So everybody's spiritual journey, something is pushing you to do something. Listen to your intuition. Listen to something outside of yourself that is trying to communicate with you, because that is your first step towards evolution. And then along the way, someone or something could come and give you a tool. But unless you are present to yourself fully, other things, what others are going to tell you is only going to become a tool, just like, okay, read this book, look at this PowerPoint. Okay, but they're only going to give you the what you need in a very linear fashion. Spiritual growth is an exponential and quantum jump. It is not a linear thing. That is why we need to stop looking at what is the tool that's going to give me. But if something is telling you that this is what feels right for me, then in the spiritual expansion, then start there. Start with what is simple. Start with your intuition. Start with signs that keep coming to you. So you are your own guide. You are your own tool. Use yourself as a tool would be what I would say.
Well, I know one thing, well, there's several things that we agree on, but one thing that I know we agree on that I love and you love is good food. So because you have been teaching people how to cook and you're talking about some of the tools. Let's talk about food. Why is the food we eat so important for our spiritual connection?
Okay, I'm gonna turn it around a little bit differently. Okay, I was born through my mother who gave birth to me. But I think my other mother is my Mother Earth. And I think there's so much debate about like what is right for you to eat. Is meat eating right? Is plant-based diet right? You know what? We need to just relax. We need to just relax about all that. If we connect to the pulsing Mother Earth, her heartbeat, we will really understand what she is offering in the bounty of her basket. When she is offering from the bounty of her basket, what she's offering to you is the right thing for you to eat. A mother will never serve a child that which is bad for the child, and she would never deplete herself in doing so. That's the first and foremost. We have to start eating from an ecological perspective, from an ecosystem perspective, not from the perspective of self. So the whole point of what is right for a physical body is a three-dimensional way of looking at it. That is why people say, well, my body requires this, this body requires that, because we're not connected to Mother Earth. Mother Earth, depending on where you are, she has automatically created a garden and a bounty for you to enjoy, not to take, but to give what she take, what to take what she gives you. That's the first and foremost. When you start from there, all this thing about like what is right for me, what is right for you, I grew up, all that is going to disappear. Because in your three-dimensional way of eating, your physical body requires something that is true to your physical body. But when your physical body evolves into the quantum body, your quantum body requires something that is aligned with what the Mother Earth is offering you.
So I want to stop you there for a second. I want you to explain to our audience the concept of quantum body, quantum physics, because you mentioned this word on several occasions, and Brendan Murphy, who I had on recently, he discussed the word. I know what it actually means, but can you unpack that word for us? Could you say quantum body?
So in the latest book I'm writing, they call it a meta body. Okay, a physical body is something that is a karmic body. What does it mean? We have born for lifetimes after lifetimes after lifetimes. We have karma from lifetimes of living on this planet. A meta body is something that does not carry those karmic balances. It is clear of that karmic balances. If you take Buddhism, it's called the nirvanic body. If you take Christianity, it's the Christ consciousness. If you take Hinduism, it's called the Krishna consciousness. You know, there's a term coined in every single religion. But what it is a pure state of consciousness. In pure state of consciousness, you are not seeking something. What is natural to your organic state comes to you organically. It is not about chasing anymore. It is about beingness. That beingness, you know, when you are being, the beingness teaches you naturally and organically as to what it requires for you to live on this earth. Does it make sense? Go ahead.
No, it makes sense. And it's interesting. That sort of leads me to my next question, because that sort of has come up in your book. The Lion's Wisdom. Can you talk about the inspiration for writing this book? I know you said this was a book that was channeled. Discuss what that mm-hmm. means. And then also, mm-hmm. what's your intention for writing this book, and what do you expect people to walk away from after they put this book down?
Okay, so you know, there's a lot of questions, but I'll answer you. I'll start from somewhere. I think it'll answer all the questions. So basically, I'm not a writer. I never actively thought about writing. I've considered it. Oh, it'll be nice to write, but I'm not a writer at all. If you give me to write an email, I have to think twice about like what I have to put on.
I'm
that,
the same
know?
Way. It takes me forever.
Yeah,
I'm to, like, because the intent of the like picking up the phone is so much easier. You send a person an email like, well, I didn't really mean it that way, but you put these extra dots and you highlighted this. And so I'm the same way when it comes to email and also to writing. I enjoy it. I'm more of a speaker and more of a poet, but I have to channel a different spirit to put things on paper. So I can definitely identify with that.
Yeah. So you nailed it, Lamar. You just nailed it, because I am not a writer, because for me, it's always like, am I going to say the right thing? Is it going to come across? Even when writing an email to you, I'm like, I hope he doesn't, you know, there's so much in it. But what happened is, you know, I mentioned to you the book of Love and Creation. So the author of the book had a seminar here in Chicago. So I went to be part of it. And, you know, I was, I stood up on the second day and I said, you know, what is my purpose? And the guides laughed and said, you know, you all want us to hand over what your purpose is. Understand that you are in the way of your own purpose. And I said, okay, all right. So I came home the next day. I said, okay, I'm just going to sit and meditate. And believe it or not, I come from a Hindu background, even though I don't practice Hinduism. I don't practice any religion. I sat and I started meditating, and a rabbi came through in my meditation and started speaking to me. And I thought that was very interesting. So the next day I decided to meditate again. And I said, I'm going to put whatever words are coming through on paper and let's see what happens. So I started meditating. I got out of the meditation and started putting words on the paper. Next thing I knew, in like an hour, I had an entire chapter. I had no idea what I was writing. I didn't know what was going to come next. I just put a hand on the paper with my pen and started writing, and it just kept flowing and flowing. In an hour, hour and a half, I had a chapter. So the next day, at 5 o'clock in the morning, my forearm started tingling. And I said, okay, why is it tingling? And it's 5 a.m. in the morning. So I woke up and I said, you know what? I have a feeling I'm being asked to write. I sat the next day, I started writing 21 days, every day, an hour and a half to two, I finished my first book, which is yet to be published. And then the second book happened. As I finished my first book, I needed time to just some downtime and not write, because even though I enjoyed the writing, it was also in some way, it was a little bit like, it was a lot to take in for me. And I had, meanwhile, friends had come together to read my first book. They were just loving it. And I had said like, okay, I need some time off not to write. And I got a very resounding yes from my guides. And one day, sometime in, you know, September, October timeframe, as I was reviewing the first book, I said, you know what? I may be ready to write the second book. And I didn't think right away. I thought a month or 2 months from now. The next morning, hands are tingling, 5 a.m. in the morning, I was woken up. And that's how the Lion's Wisdom came through. And the Lion's Wisdom, see, for me, it's not about, you know, it's not about, how do I even say it? It's about really shifting the human consciousness. That is my primary goal. And as part of the Lion's Wisdom, you know, once the book was released last September, I created a nonprofit, which is still not, it has still some more work to do, but I created a company called Positively Yours, so the PAWSI, Positively Yours, which is the last chapter in the Lion's Wisdom, to really serve humanity. For me, I am learning more about abundance. I would like to be abundant in a way that I am also able to give back to humanity for humanitarian causes where it's needed. And also, if you know, it doesn't have to be just in the form of money. It is in the form of wisdom. It is in the form of art. It's in the form of, you know, a radio show, a podcast such as yours, and whatever form that is. And I don't want to really contain it. This is all I'm going to do, because my work has been evolving at such a fast rate. Even I don't know what it's going to go next. And I have a certain roadmap, but I don't have an end or a destination, if that makes sense for you.
Makes a lot of sense. You know, it was interesting when I was reading the excerpt from your book, The Lion's Wisdom, I started to think of the movie, The Life of Pi. And I was thinking about The Life of Pi and this tiger. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking of this lion. Is there any similarities that you feel between that particular film or that particular writing and The Lion's Wisdom of your book?
You know what? I haven't read The Life of Pi, but I'll tell you what I have read, though. There is a book called Ishmael, and I've read Ishmael a while ago. Ishmael is a very amazing book on what it is about Mother Earth and what we have done with Mother Earth. And I think the author passed away. It's a fantastic book. And people who have read my book, even though, like for me, my channeling doesn't really know what's going to come, but some people have made the comment, it sounds like Ishmael. In Ishmael, it's a gorilla that teaches a man on what life is. In this book, the lion is inculcating his wisdom and what it is to live on Mother Earth. He doesn't speak as a lion, even though he speaks from his perspective. He really has a very balanced view of what it means to live and share this planet.
I know besides being a writer, you are an artist. Can you talk to me about Galactic Sound and Light Art? What actually is that?
Well, Lamar, to be honest with you, I did not know what it is until it started coming to me. As part of the sixth book, I was told that I'm going to be downloading codes. Now, even though I've written six books, I am just starting to get comfortable with channeled writing. As I'm getting comfortable with channeled writing, all of a sudden I hear I'm going to get codes. And I was like, okay, I was a little scared, to be honest with you. So the day when it came that I was supposed to download the codes, I sat and I was like petrified. And I said, you know what? One thing I heard was this is going to be the metadata. And I didn't know what they meant by metadata, my guides. So I said, okay, I'm a computer engineer. I know what a metadata means in terms of a hard disk. So I said, since I understand that, let's go. That's all I said. I put my pen on the paper and I had alphabets, which later I found out were light language alphabets. And it evolved into sound alphabets as well. And I gave it to one of a physicist, and I said, do you know what this is? And he said, it seems to be light language. So one of the things I do is I don't go outside of my work and start to verify, because the minute you start verifying, you're putting yourself in self-doubt. I just allow whatever comes to come. So I started my artwork on December 23rd. By December 29th, I knew intuitively I was supposed to go and start drawing. I went to the CVS around the corner, bought a drawing notebook, had a black marker and started drawing. And in literally an hour, I had five diagrams that were written, that were drawn on a piece of paper. And then it evolved into metallic colors, patterns, and now live animals are coming through in my drawing. So basically what this diagram is, the black paper is our karma that needs to be released. And the metallic is the light that comes into the image. And the patterns are actually what the sound that universe contains, the pure consciousness contains, which is also called the metatones, which are coming through the artwork. So the artwork literally is a galactic metatonic sound and light art. And this all was given to me as I was downloading this work. Between January 2nd and today, I have done about 200 to 250 artwork. And you have to know one thing about me, I'm not an artist. I've never used a paintbrush. I've never used paints in my entire life. People who have seen this artwork are blown away because it seems like someone who has always known how to draw is drawing. Every step of the way with the evolution of my work, I know exactly what to buy from the store, what colors to go and pick. Every single step of the way, as I'm attuned, I am walked through. This is how gifts can be brought out from our physical sense. We don't have to go and learn something brand new, although we could. It doesn't mean that learning from outside is bad, but there's so much within us that has been unexplored, like Mother Earth's deep crevices.
And Uma is doing a good job of articulating this, and I don't think I can even articulate it as great as she has. But even though she's articulating it as with the language that she has, it's beyond a language. You have to look at this artwork and experience it. It's going to be on my page and it'll be on her page, but it's everything that she says. You can really feel the vibration coming through just looking at it right now in front of the screen, the colors, the designs. You can feel your vibration being lifted. And I encourage you all to check out her artwork. It's amazing. But Uma, I can talk to you forever. You have definitely awakened something in me. I really appreciate you for spending some time with me. But before we get out of here, because I want our listeners to stay in contact with you, I want them to pick up copies of your book. I want them to see the great galactic sound and light art that you're doing. How can our listeners get in contact with you?
It's definitely go into my website, www.umashankari.com, which is UMASHANKARI.com. And there should be a form for them to reach out to me. Otherwise, they can literally drop me an email at uma@umashankari.com.
Now, before you get out of here, we have to play what I call the super bomb questions. And I have to let people know I did not send her these questions ahead of time. And so she's going to respond as quickly as possible. And I am going to start right now. You ready?
Yep. Let's go.
All right. Here we go. Uma, what is your favorite word?
Consciousness.
What is your favorite quote or spiritual verse?
Oh, I have to. The person that comes to my mind is Nelson Mandela.
Okay.
It is about unity and consciousness. He stood for the apartheid to end. That's what comes to me.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is being in the physical body, knowing that I can be in multiple dimensions.
What's your spirit animal?
My spirit animal is the lion.
I knew you were going to say that. What brings you to tears of joy?
Seeing humanity rise from what is to what can be.
What brings you to tears of sorrow?
A child being tortured or treated badly.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Actually, now I have a lot of time to do. I wish, at the moment, I won't be able to answer, but in normal times, I always wish I had time to do more artwork. But now that we are in lockdown, I'm doing a lot of my artwork.
Okay. And which you all can check out on her site because it's amazing. Give me your three things you do in your morning routine. Just three things.
I wake up in the morning and do yoga for like an hour. I do celery juice in the morning after I do my yoga. And once I complete that, I sit and read and edit my sixth book, which is Awakening the Buddha Consciousness. And once I'm done with that, I sit and do my drawings.
If you were in the Miss America talent competition, what would your talent be?
My talent would be to embrace your body without having to flaunt it.
Uma, you are amazing people. I told you you were in for a treat today. So thank you for tuning in. Uma, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lamar. I appreciate it.
And I would also like to thank my engineer, Alec Blanc, and my producer, Kimberly Peterson, Supremacy, for our theme music. And all of you for listening, make sure you subscribe, leave a comment, and stop being stingy and share me with your friends. We're on all the platforms. Check us out. Also, if you want to know more about me, go to drlds.com. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen and that some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. I hope each spiritual question and answer we've shared in this post has helped to show you that you are not alone, that whatever you may be going through, there are many, many other people who can say, that's exactly how I feel, or I've been there. Thanks for tuning in, and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace.